time once again to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope, here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cottolo.
All this time, he actually liked me.
That's Cottolo over there. You know what I mean?
Stomp it. Stomp it. Broadcasting now, coming to you live from this place to your place. Helmets and face masks are not acceptable. Neo postmodernists, put on your awry straw hat and your high heeled sneakers. Wake up, it's night. We're here again to chronicle Y2K plus 13. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. Can you imagine that? That this would be going into bordellos? You know, people actually asked me that at one point. They said, this is really going, are they piping it? They used to say piping the music through. Are they piping the music through into a bordello? Why on earth would people be wanting to do the things they do in a bordello and listen to me? It's good dynamics. It's the rhythm. I got the rhythm. I got the dynamics. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. It's time to chronicle once again. And there's any number of things I'm going to tell you that are just more things you don't need to know. Because you are in the world at this given time in the history of mankind. You are with me and everyone else in the swimming in the pool of information overload. I hope you might be drowning in it. And I'm going to tell you a number of ways you can handle that as we go through this particular bunch of minutes that are now started and are now going into, what are we, what was that, 120, 16, 60, 120, 119, whatever minutes they might be. So stay with us. And, every time this show begins, it's like one of those number things, you know, the casino number things, picking around and where it goes, where it stops. No one knows. And as this stuff is going on, I just let my mind like float around of the various things I think about, which there's no need to go into that. But you know what it's like being when you're just kind of floating in thoughts and not necessarily bad or good or trying to no problems, not just floating in these thoughts. And I say to myself, what on earth am I going to say? And as it is, I open the show differently every week, and people are happy about that, I think, because they tell me that. They say, that's great. I never know how this show is going to start. But we like to listen to that, and then we turn it off because you'd come on. Not true. But although some, because you don't like me, you're not listening to it in the first place or the second place or the third place or any other place that you order this kind of stuff. But I'm always thinking, what am I going to say? I mean, how am I going to open this? How am I going to, when the curtain opens and I don't have a script, I don't have anything here that says, now let's, you know, or I haven't thought up some clever opening and I haven't used my writing skills, my imagination or anything to be able to open it up. And so it really winds up that all these thoughts are flying around, and then where it stops is where I begin. And I trust many times it actually falls into place with what we're going to be talking about here. Now, we don't have any guests this evening, but let me remind you that many guests are to come as we end January, Y2K plus 13, first month gone, okay, gone. 30 days has September, April, June, and November. All the rest have 31. And here we are, the 31st. Now, if you're listening to this as a repeat, obviously it's not the 31st. It's already February. How long was it in school? Do you remember? Think back. How long ago was it? Or is this just a New York thing? How long ago, or when did you finally, is what I'm trying to say, is when did you finally realize that it's February? Because I grew up, and it was February. February. There was no R. In New York, there was no R in this month. It was February. January, February. February. My mother said it. My father said it. My aunt said it. The neighbors said it. The people I went to school said it. The teachers said it. The priests said it. The rabbis said it. February. What month is this, sir? It's February. And it was, I don't remember. I can't put my finger on the time when I found out that it was February. I don't know. Maybe when, even when we were spelling it when we were kids, because I guess we had to spell it somewhere on a piece of paper. You don't just put F-E-B period. You know, we had to spell it out. But I'm not here to showcase the ignorance of the teachers I had through grade school and in high school. I'm not going to do that because I think it's probably my fault to begin with. Because here I am trying to be a philosophical, creative, glowing being, you know, in my teens, and I don't even know what they are in February. What's that all about? Where did that stick into my? I could be February and still, you know, how could you read Jean-Paul Sartre and not know Sartre? You even know that it's, I know how to spell that. You snob says, S-A-T-S-Sartre, S-A-R-T-R-E. That's French. Sartre. I read Sartre in February. It's like there's no way of getting out of stupidity. If you have it, you show it. And eventually, that's what happens. But we are going to have guests. Let me return to that particular point as we go through February. Maybe it's because people say it, don't say it like that. I don't remember hearing people. Well, of course, they didn't say it like that in New York, I'm saying, but a long time before I left New York. I was 28 years old when I left New York. And then people were saying all sorts of things. And they were saying things differently. But we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about other things. But we're going to talk about many other things as the months continue, as we leave February and go into March and April, so as the case may be. And we're still waiting for, I think, Heather Drain will be. Terrible flu. A lot of people I know have had this flu for like weeks. And, oh boy. So she'll be back. Heather will be back. And we'll have clips from horrible movies that are great. And she's going to be on. And also, I think February 21st, I want you, is going to be a grand reunion. My old radio partner before my days with Wolfman Jack, my comedy partner, Tom Savino, scheduled to be here with me live. That's going to be fun. Even though you people have no idea what that's all about. This is someone I went to college and played music and did many, many creative things, including the beginning of radio professionally. And we're going to get him in on it. And he's a wacko. You're going to love him. He's great. He's funny. I think he's ultimately funnier than me in a different way. Funnier than me in a different way? No, he's funnier than me, but it's a different way. It's not, and I don't even consider myself funny. I consider myself dead serious. Okay? I'm always serious. But he's great, and he'll let it speak for himself when we get him on the air. I believe it'll be February 21st when him and I will reunite on radio for the first time. Well, reunite. How many reunions can you have? We'll reunite for the first time in, oh my God, I don't even want to tell you how many years. So we're going to be looking forward to that. Just keep looking at catolochronicles.blogspot.com and, of course, my Facebook page, where you could find out all the things that are going on, what I'm doing, when you can listen, what's going on, and gems of wisdom and gems of wisdom. Yeah, I should claim that. And at Frank Catolo for Twitter. And I've been so busy with so many things. I'm behind on my Twittering, my tweeting, smart aleck things. But, you know, there's enough people there tweeting junk. I don't always need to address junk. In fact, I find my Facebook page is a better place. I'm addressing an X amount of audience, not almost anyone who can see it. But that's all part of what we're going to speak about in this information overload show about information overload. Are you overloading with information? I think you might be doing that, just that. And I'm going to tell you how you can take advantage of the information you get and don't want is, because it's a big thing. Now, I'm not holding a class. This is not one of those Tony Robbins things where I'm going to pump you up full of, you know, affirmative things and tell you, it's not one of those things. I'm going to give you some suggestions because you might not even know it. It's kind of like, what's the silent killer? Blood pressure. Well, of course, blood pressure itself is not a killer. You need blood pressure. I mean, the pressure of your blood, too high or too low. It's a silent killer, they call it. The silent killer. And you might not even know that you're overloaded with information, but boy, are you overloaded with information. And at some point along the way, you're going to realize that you don't need maybe so much of it you don't need. But that's after you realize that the bulk of it is affecting you as you don't even know. You don't even know how it's affecting you. We're going to get into that because there's just so much going on, and it always was, there always was so much going on. And here, as we do for 2 hours, we'll be doing it. But here's where it stopped in my head when I said, what am I going to talk about? You know what stopped in my head was, to begin with, and this is not the theme, but round and round it went. Where it stopped, no one knows. I finally know where it stopped. It stopped right at this point where I was thinking and going to ask you, and I'm going to ask you, do you ever think, do you ever think or wonder about someone you only met briefly, a lot more than you should? I mean, not should. I don't know how much you're required to think about anybody. I have no idea if there's a law, if there's a psychological equation to that, or what the case might be there. I just think that once in a while, and I don't know if anybody does this, do you ever stop and just think about a person, or maybe something reminds you of a person, and you say, "That's what's his face, or what's her name, or what have you?" And in this strange kind of way, because there's always got to be a strange kind of way, there can be nothing that isn't strange about this. Because if you don't know a person, you never knew a person, why do they even stay there? Why does one thing spark a memory of someone you didn't know that well? You may, and yet it's there. Now, does that happen to anybody else? Is it just me? Because it's been happening to me. I have been suddenly flashed, and this might be like subconscious explosions. Explosions? That's a little too harsh. Subconscious messages. Because, and they might mean nothing. That's the great difference between exploring like dreams and thoughts in psychology. And there's like, what means something? What means nothing? But yet a stream of these things. I think about certain people that, and I don't even know if they, I can't even think about, no, can't even assess the possible influence or effect they've had upon me. And yet, they pop up here and there. It's very strange, and I always look into that. Now, my mind, as I said, I leave my mind as open as possible, and I let that wheel go round and round and round. It's a de-stressing of the overload that I'm going to talk about. But I don't harp on this. I just wonder, what the heck is that all about? And it's not even I can't even make a conversation out of this. Do you? But I want you to think about and be aware of this. Do you suddenly think of someone and I guess if it means anything, I guess it means that some people make impressions upon us and affect us in ways we don't know. And I don't know that at all. I don't know that. You know, it's amazing what I don't know. I know some people would say, I don't think so, because I listen to the show and you know very little. But it's just thinking about people. But when you know, but then you, and then I don't know, maybe a part of this is my, is a creative penchant of mine, because I'll make up things or come up with questions or put these people I don't know very well, or maybe I should have known better. I don't know. I don't even know that. There's no should have or would have or anything. I'm just wondering what. And then, you know what I do then? I think, no, wait a second. Let's even go further than that. If you want to talk about, I don't know if this is madness. I just call it madness. But yeah, I don't know. You ever think about people you never met or don't know, or that you only know from pictures or from media or from, I don't know, these people ever exist. If you, isn't it exciting when you're younger and you see somebody live who you've seen on television or in the movies? That's like a very exciting thing when you're a kid. I mean, youth. It shouldn't be. Let me tell you something. It should not be so exciting in your adulthood. Let me just tell you that, okay? Unless it swings you back to when you were a child and you have that amazing feeling of something. Because usually, obviously, it happens. I'm talking about celebrities or people that you like, or that you somehow have this invisible, weird, audience relationship. And then you see them live. And through my life, I know that I've wound up meeting people who I could never even imagine having met. And it's such a weird thing. Not an amazing thing now, an amazing thing. I pretty much got used to it. I got so used to it that I was able to just approach people. And I was so, this actually works itself into information overload, because let me just say this. I don't think that ultimately we've always been overloaded. I think this is a very big thing they're talking about these days, that because of the gadgets and because of the digital revolution, that there's just so many channels on radio, so satellite radio, internet, your iPads, websites, YouTubes, MyTubes, all that. It's so much going on that they're saying that you, the person in this atmosphere, are being pounded. You're pelted. I love the word. Pelted. I love that so much. I said it three times. And how much of this stuff is bouncing off of you? And I don't believe any of it's bouncing off of you. I believe that it's all going in there in some form or other. Even if you don't get a lot of, if the file about the various piece of information that goes into you, even if that file is not big, you're getting something. It's all going into you. And some people get very confused or think that it's nuts. But I don't think, I don't think this is very different. Consider this. You live in the rural upstate Illinois area in the 1940s. And in the 1940s, I could give you a perfect, well, you might not have seen it. I know, I thought everyone has seen The Shawshank Redemption, but I was going to give you a movie reference to this. But let's just say that you're a country person in the 40s. There's only radio. There's not even television in the 40s. You've got radio, and that's all you got, books and people. And your environment. Hey, there's another one. How many people used to say environment? In New York, there was no R in environment. You don't even say it. I don't even know why it's there. Same thing with February. February. The environment in February. And you know what? The people would get on the news and they'd say it that way. The news people. I mean, they're supposed to be the professionals, the experts in English and broadcasting. But Roger Grimsby, May he rest in peace. WABC Eyewitness News gets up and says, he would say, the environment this February, he said it all wrong. So you're even listening to them, it's wrong. If you lived in a farm country environment, let's just forget about the R's, okay? All together. No R's. In the 1940s, before all the so-called purveyors of this information, not just television, there's no cable television, there's no 24-hour television, there's nothing except the air, you know, in theater, if you go, even in, you know, what did they do in the farm countries, especially in northern Illinois? Why did I pick northern Illinois? Because Ohio is better. These days, if you go to an Amish town or settlement, there's obviously less of the, strict Amish, not, you know, Mennonite or advanced. There's advanced Amish. Do you know there are advanced Amish? The advanced Amish are allowed, you know, they're allowed to have cars and phones. Okay. But imagine you're just this country bumpkin. And you get a trip to New York City in the 40s. Okay? In the 40s. What is going to happen to you? What is going to happen to your senses? And this is where information overload is reportedly on the attack. Your senses. If you were that country fellow and or gal, and a country person, a space person, and you were suddenly hurled or brought, you went on a plane, however you got there. The environment in the city, no less the city that never sleeps itself, even in the 40s, would be such an overload. Not just an information overload. Now, information has a broad meaning. We're not just talking about definitions, English, ideas, what happened, news, weather, sports, I don't know, whatever. We're talking about what your mind gets. Your mind gets information from almost everything. And that's why I was saying in the beginning that some pieces of information that happen to be a person you might have met or saw, or, you know, once and that's it in your life, gone. And yet it comes back to you because that's the information you have. Look, I'm not a brain expert and I don't play one on television. I just know that we've done a lot of talking on this show through the years about the brain, how it works. A neo-postmodernist is all based on the fact that we all think the same way. There's nothing technical. We don't have to get into genes. We don't have to get into cells. We don't have to get into any of that stuff. Just that the brain is working. And it's moving, and it's filing, and it's the busiest place on earth. But if you're that person in the 40s who goes from the country to New York, you could literally have yourself a breakdown. You could literally be affected very badly from the overload, unless you somehow. All I'm saying is, let's look at that. Now, let's take now. I don't think that's any difference. That stress, that pressure, that absorbing of information, that attack on the senses that happened to people in the 40s if they were country people and went to the city, I don't think that is very different, if different at all, from today having cable television, cable television, iPads, iPods, internet, smartphones, any other gadget that is constantly finding a way to get another piece of information to you. A couple of weeks ago, we talked with William Paisley, and he was talking about how the iPhone, well, phones, you know, mobile, let's just say mobile internet, mobile online, mobile connection, let's call it. Maybe they call it that. Mobile connection is what all of the information market people, I was looking for content, the content industry. You know, I love that. Dr. Lawrence Lesser, you know, who's now, I believe, on, you know, he's on Current TV, the one that, that now Al Jazeera owns, Current TV, that, you know, which was known as Al Gore's station on cable. Dr. Lesser, who was on this show, one of the first guests on this show ever, talked about and mentioned, and I think he coined, I don't know if he coined the phrase, the content industry, but back then when the internet and the mainstream media was, there was a river so big between us that you couldn't walk through it or swim through it. I know it's a bad metaphor. What can I tell you? But he, I think it came up with the content industry. The content industry is constantly on top now of this mobile thing. That's what Paisley was talking about. Ways that people, that companies, everybody wants to get the word out. Everybody wants to shove stuff into your brain, because they have something to sell you. That's just the people have something to sell you, physically sell you. I mean, they have products, services. The other side of that is the information is the opinion. That's really nuts these days. If you listen, well, this is all the stuff I'm saying they didn't have. And yet this, because you know why? Because all this stuff, the kid, the woman, the man, the person from the country in the 40s who comes to New York and is attacked by sounds and crowds and buildings and space, a spatial breakdown. And a sensual breakdown because the senses are attacked. Noise, vision, everything is just smells. You know, I mean, imagine all that stuff going into that person. That's no different from the, from what's going on today, because everywhere you go, you're going to get this. You're being attacked from the commercial point of view, and you're being attacked from a philosophical point of view. Amazingly. And they have nothing to sell except themselves. And if you listen, if you, especially on Sunday nights, Monday mornings, Saturday nights, Sunday mornings, on these very high number channels of cable, I love doing this because I'm a night Nick. I know I'm coining a phrase. I said that the other night to somebody. I said, you know, I'm a night Nick. And she said, well, I never heard that term before. And I said, that's because I just made it up. He's night owl. I don't want to be an owl. I want to be a Nick, like a beatnik. I want to be a night Nick. I am a night. I'm a night Nick. I dig the night. I do it in the night. I work in the night. I live in the night. I am a creature of darkness, but I'm not one of those twilight people. So being a night Nick, I listen on Saturday night, Sunday morning. Which is always really Sunday morning, isn't it? Once it's midnight, it's morning. It's the next day. It's Sunday. You listen. You go to those high number channels, 398, 699, 798, 7, whatever town you may be, or a city you may be, where you have cable, and the philosophical information machine is spitting out ideas, thoughts, concepts, like, I mean, rapid fire. I said that twice. It was not an echo. And that stuff is coming out, and a lot of it is religious. And as you know, if you've listened to this show for as long as I've been here, if not only some of it, you know how, you know, I have my favorites. And I like to watch these. I love to watch these televangelists who used to be, I guess, be the radio evangelists. What were they before? They weren't called televangelists in the old days. And I used to, oh, wow, the stories that Wolfman Jack used to tell me, because he used to sell time in the Mexican station to a lot of these guys before there was television. And when there was television, but it was so young and they didn't have it all day, all night, these guys would buy time, get on the air and, you know, and ask for money. Now they all ask for money too. So that is, that's a product in a sense, but they're filling your head with the thoughts and ideas that might not be yours. And I'm not saying that you need to always adhere to the thoughts and ideas and concepts and values that are only yours, and not by any means. I'm just saying that what's going on is this, they're shooting at you. They're not asking you. They're not addressing you. They're just shooting it at you. And I love these guys because they're great performers. To me, it's a great vaudeville. If vaudeville still exists in any way, shape, or form, it exists in the religious world, because there you got all these performers now. And I've also told you, I don't got all of them down. I know their faces and stuff. I don't even know a lot of their names. There's this one group in some theater somewhere down in, it must be down south. What a bunch of incredibly talented singers and musicians, and some of the songs are even good, you know? They take them for face value. They're wonderful. And they're just always up there performing. And they have guys coming on and talking, and you got your, you know, Swaggart is back. You know that Swaggart is back. Jerry Lee Lewis's cousin is a Swaggart. Jimmy Swaggart, the guy who, of course, was in that gigantic scandal way back and caught with a prostitute in a hotel somewhere. And because of his stature and because of what he did, that was a big deal. So nobody ever tried to find me in a hotel. Nobody cared I was in a hotel or a motel with a prostitute or someone acting as a prostitute. Whatever, didn't matter. I could have been in there with a clown, and it wouldn't matter. But him, they found him there, and they brought up. Okay, so Jimmy Swaggart is back, and you can see him. I'm not doing an advertisement for him, but I'm telling you, he's back. He plays piano, he sings, he's got friends, and he talks. And then there are these other guys, and now they're wearing all high-tech garb. You know, they get the microphones and the phones that are in their ears, stuck in their ears, and the little thing, and the wireless, a lot of wireless stuff going on with religion. This is the great vaudeville. And it's all happening late at night, early in the morning. I know it happens a lot on during the day and what have you. And there are certain stations that do carry that kind of broadcasting. Although I haven't seen my favorite guy, Robert Tilton. I haven't seen him lately. I'm a little disturbed. Unless I just haven't found out where. I guess I have to go to his website and try to find them somewhere. But this is the new vaudeville for me. These are entertaining fellows and gals to me. But as far as I can say, what I'm saying is, if you, they're in an area that isn't just, they're not trying to entertain you. They're trying to influence you. They're trying to get something from you. They're trying to inject philosophy and stuff into you with a great, psychological, maneuvers. They're getting to you with the magic water. How about he's back too. What's his name? I'm talking about him. That guy with the magic wheel sends you the water, the magic water, and there's other guys who, tell you the seed, you know, you plant the seed, somehow. I'm yet to find that part in the Bible where it says, send the guy on television money so that your soul can be saved and your lives can suddenly turn into something. They make this connection between God and money, and that your money shouldn't be yours, it should be theirs. This is all part of the act. It's all I'm saying is, this is the great vaudeville. This is an attack. This is information overload. Imagine that there are, I don't know how many of these fellows might be there. And I'm going to move on to that. I'm not just going to look at that like, you know, I'm not attacking. I'm just telling you about the folks who were selling the situation, the selling the service of whatever it is, the religion, because they're still on the channels, they're attacking you by telling you they have have you seen the magic pillow? Whatever is that thing? They have the pillow. There's a pillow. Your pillows don't work. These pillows work. These are the best pillows. Knives. Ron Popeil is still doing that show. It runs again and again and again. He's selling you 100 knives that are the best knives in the world. The best knives in the world for only 3 payments of $13.95. I don't get and they're cutting tin cans and ribs, big beef ribs, and they're cutting this filleting fish, and they're filleting oranges and grape. It's unbelievable. This stuff is just attacking you. Now remember, that's just TV. And now if you have an attitude, a demeanor, if your demeanor in life is too inquisitive, too inquisitive. Can you be too inquisitive? Yes, you can, because you could be influenced by all this junk. Okay, this is what I'm saying. The salesman, and listen, this is all at the same level. The salesman of religion, of spiritual stuff, and the salesman of concrete things, and the salesman of even the salesman of things you need. Like I used to do pants commercials when the Shortstop was here. I talked for 20 minutes about pants. I got to tell you need pants. Of course you know you need pants. It's you can't even walk around in public without pants. You know, something. You can wear a dress, but most men don't like to do that. The key there was most. And so I don't have to tell you that, but you know, and what I'm telling you right now in a sense is also noise. That's what we're going to put all of this stuff into. One big cauldron, noise. Let's even look at entertainment. Let's look at music. You look at entertainment. In the entertainment category, you also have sports. You have to put sports in the entertainment category. And there are entire channels, not just one, entire channels. There are channels that have 2 channels to the 1 channel of sports. Sports. Tired of talking about the seed that will save your soul? Go over and find out about the guy who's playing in the team of yours that you like. A team. A bunch of guys who go out there and, you know, throw balls, hit pucks, kick each other, whatever. Even boxing, which I have always said I like. But I don't, you know, but it's like candy. It's candy. Or it's a noise, or it's a song I like. You'll listen to songs you like. Music is noise. Noise, 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 noise. Everywhere, noise. So you got the noise from the music. You got the noise from the entertainment. What kind of entertainment? Any kind you like. Not just on the internet. And people are really spending their time strangely now in terms of the internet, aren't they? Because, why? Because people can spend an hour on YouTube, an hour or two. And you could find anything. Just put in, you know, on the top there, whatever it is you want to put in. Put in a word. And you'll wind up with any number, and sometimes a giant number, of videos related to it. You could listen to music on there. You could, anything you want, okay? Anything you want is there. So there's that. And what is it? It's noise. And yet, the noise I'm talking about, okay, this is information.
This is information. So the overload, this bunch of all this information is noise, and it's coming from everywhere, and you can get it everywhere now. It's no longer just on television or just on, but the I said entertainment, news. Now we go to news. Now let's go to news and politics. News and politics. Holy Christmas. You got stations that are selling opinions. You got stations, correct? Of course I'm correct. And they're trying to, everybody who has an opinion, that which is everybody, but I mean, these people, what are they doing? They're just making a living. They're just making a living. You know who I'm talking about. And yet they come across just like the religious guys. I don't care whether it's liberal or conservative, although let's face it, when it comes to radio, talk radio, and it comes to television, the amount of conservative personalities is gigantic, even though that seems to be losing a lot of weight. But still, it's there. And they want you to think like they do. Of course, the liberals do too, but, and maybe people in the middle do anyway. Everybody, that's just a human nature thing. Everybody wants to feel comfortable because you're on their side, okay? Regardless of this. But again, noise. It's noise. Do you want to hear this stuff? Or can you, as I'm saying, now, if you think about all the categories we talked about, can you put that all in perspective and think about what I'm saying, the noise that is everywhere? And how much of that do you let in? Will you let in all of it, any of it that you address or allow yourself to listen to is screwing around with you? It's going in there regardless. Now, the overload thing has to do with, are people getting too much information? Is this information, whatever it is you like, is all of this information upsetting you at places you don't even know? Places I don't even know. Well, I mean, like, are you nervous? You know what else? Let me tell you something. Let's look at this, too, just to be totally fair about all this information. And that's this. A lot of it is education. Education is noise. Is part of the information overload, and it's noise. Do you know, just think about all the emails you can get, which are now, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, are all connected to products or what have you, but they're information, and there's a lot of people, organizations, associations, that aren't necessarily religious, but they're on some kind of campaign, let's say health alone is a plethora of information that will attack every possible way it can. And I know I get these, and I know you can, and I don't know how much you do. You know, you can, you're allowed to write to people and say, you know, unsubscribe me. You got to be subscribed. There's all these rules. I don't even understand half of them, but there are all these things. And you hear this stuff, but they keep finding more categories within, subcategories within the categories. Let's look at health for a second, okay? Now, of course, what kind of health is it? Mental health, is physical health. But the other day, I got an email that was explaining the eight facts about urine. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't know about things. You shouldn't have some kind of information or some kind of facts about anything, no less urine. You should know about your urine. And there's no doubt about it. But I sat there and I went, I don't really want to read about these things about you. How do I budget my time now to find out about what I need to know about the urine? Eight things they say I don't know. They assume right off the bat, I know nothing about urine. Now, people have never walked up to me and said, Frank, let me ask you, if you know something about urine, will you tell me? No, I mean, it's not like they do that because I know, maybe I know as much as I need to know. I've had my own experiences with this in the health department. But I don't need to sit and read this. I'm budgeting my time. Just like if I know it's the middle of the night and I'm laying in bed and I don't feel like reading, which is also, information. Regardless, information is just content. Content. Let's just talk about content. Now, your brain can handle any incredible amounts of content that you don't even understand that or know about. That's why you have dreams and you wonder about that you can't put together because it's mixing up all that junk. That's why, like I said, I don't know if it happens to you. Once in a while, the thought of someone who you might have met once or whatever comes and you go, what? Where are they? What was that all about? Who were they? And then you come up with all these questions and scenarios. Because round the thoughts, the information, all the data, all the pictures, everything is going in, is all going round and round and round. Where it stops, no one knows. You know, you could make it stop. Now, when we do the second hour here, I'm going to talk about listening to this noise, understanding where you're at with this noise, and why, and how to deal with it. Because it's really no different than it ever has been with your brain. Your brain is constantly taking in information. You just don't know it. So they're saying, they being the people who make up this term, information overload, and are assuming that you're getting just too much information. And when did that phrase arrive? People are talking to people, and they're saying things like, well, yes, I went to the doctor, and he took this big bloody thing out of my ear. Oh, what? Wait, too much information. It's like, where did that? Who started that one? Too much information. I don't want to know that, they're saying. But I don't want to know that. And yet that used to be part of conversation. That used to be part of learning from one another. You'd rather hear about the big bloody thing how about somebody talking to you about urine? I've been thinking about cloudy urine lately. And they go, really? Well, you have it? Well, that's some cloudy, too much information. Is there ever too much information or do you think you're being bombarded? Do you understand? How do you put yourself? How do you refract? Is it refract? Reflect? How do you reflect that? Refract it. Recoil it. No, you don't want it to recoil inside of you. But, so based on what you know, what you think, what you are in terms of labels, that's what we're going to get to. But just know, take it, we're going to get to it from that particular point of view, the point of view being that it has always been happening. Cavemen might have had information overload. Do you realize? Think about it. And they had primitive societies had less information than anyone. They just had, but they could have been compounded. And of course, that's what created. They're the ones who created the things that eventually delivered more information, because that's just environment, that's just atmosphere. And the guy or the gal or the person who goes from the country to the city, as we proposed before, and is suddenly hearing noise and getting a spatial trauma, is really not getting any less or more information than being out there in the barren fields, the wheat fields, the cotton fields, those old cotton fields back home. down in Indiana, just about a mile from Texarkana. Was Indiana really a mile from Texarkana? I thought Texarkana was in Texas or Mexico. Indiana's nowhere near that. Was down, oh, it's Louisiana. That's, I've got the wrong state. I got the wrong lyrics. Why? Because the information collided inside of me. I had so many lyrics in my head. Ones I can't even respond. Isn't it amazing how we know things and we can capture them immediately? Like that line. It was down in, I know I said Indiana, but I realized it was wrong. It was down in Louisiana, just about a mile from Texarkana and those old cotton fields back home. Why? Why did that strand of information get captured in a place where it is easily attainable in my brain? The dangers of this, I don't think, have anything to do with overload or what they're talking about. You can Google information overload, and you're going to get websites that are going to tell you. I might even find one or two of them here while we're at it. And when we come out of our little break at the top of the hour, we're going to end it with a wonderful pop piece of pop music, which I think explains a lot of the information thing in another way. And you'll hear it when we come out of it, and then we'll. What do we do? And then we'll what? Then we'll what? We'll continue the show. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of this show. I'm chronicling, and we're talking about information overload. Y2K plus 13, right here on Cotolo Chronicles. Remember, Cotolo Chronicles. That's what Cotolo does on this show. Cotolo does a lot of things, and half, if not more of that, is none of your business. But I'm here to do that, and I'm going to continue to do that as we move along, and we are going to move along through the next hour. We're going to I told you that coming up shortly. You want to go over to Facebook. You see, just as this stuff comes out, I'm telling you this. There's pieces of paper here, but they're not telling me what to do and what order to do anything that I am doing. Your information overload was, you know when it started? You know when it started? When you popped out. It probably started before you popped out of the womb, before you were born, per se, before you came out of your mom's womb. It started. I knew a couple who used to put their child to sleep at night by hanging a little player the side of the crib. Crib. The kid's still in a crib. Gregorian chants. That's information. And it was going into the child in the crib before the kid knew anything. Knowing, knowledge, before the kid had developed the idea of space and having control of his own arms and fingers and bowels or whatever. And there are people who... Well, look at prenatal health. There's another bunch. Prenatal health. Now, granted, as I've said before, this digital revolution has done so much good for us, and it has opened up the wheel within the wheel within the wheel within the wheel. But, the information, the people who are riding these waves, the concepts, the ideas, the thoughts of riding this wave have really, really been pounding hard. And they have to yell and scream because they have to get attention. They have to get your attention while everybody else is trying to get your attention. How do you deal with that? Is there such a thing as are you overloaded with information? I don't even think so. If we were all overloaded with the information the way they say, we wouldn't be breaking down. We'd be using more of our brain. And we're not doing that because we're allowing a lot of this stuff to get to us when we shouldn't. Just like we did when it wasn't here. And we let other stuff get to us. That's just the way the brain works. Do I know how the brain works? I know how my brain works. I kind of feel like I know how my brain works. So I'm going to go with that. You're going to go with this. We're going to go get yourself some liquids so you can replenish your precious bodily liquids. Or do whatever it is you got to do. And we will be right back after this happens right here on Cotolo Chronicles Y2K plus 13. Stay with us.
The Dole Chronicles, the internet talk show from the Neo Postmodern World.
In a world where reading is dying out, a new champion emerges. Wacky escapades. Parallel universes.
Hello, everyone. This is me, Frank Cotolo.
There's never a dull moment as Frank weaves a tale of a writer making you laugh, chuckle, and learn a bit about life. Pick up License to Scale by Frank Cotolo, now on Amazon for your Kindle.
Hi, I'm Julian Lennon. Are you in the band? Join me and band together for Lupus to support the Lupus Foundation of America and its efforts to provide research, education and support for all people living with lupus. Visit lupus.org to learn more about this chronic disease affecting 1.5 million Americans and find out how to join the band today.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
With video games, I always check their rating and content descriptors on the package, but there are times when I'd like more detail about what's in the game. That's why I love these new rating summaries. They provide an in-depth description of a game's content to help me decide if it's okay for my kids to play. Rating summaries are free and available on my smartphone or at home online.
For more information about video game ratings and rating summaries, go to ESRB.org.
Was it good for you, D?
In bed. I'm in bed with myself.
I've been in bed with D.
Was it good for you, D?
Of course I don't make any money. Of course I don't make any money. Hey, it's the artist D. Have you ever wondered why and how I could go around flaunting the term the internet's first superstar? Well, I was here first, and I'll tell you how and why in my new book, In Bed With Myself, The Making of the Internet's First Superstar.
I've been in bed with D, and it was so good.
Go to theartistd.com to order your autographed copy today. Oh, dear. Oh dear. Oh.
And he doesn't even have the book yet.
Shipping included. Oh, my God.
It's only $14.95. There's only 100 in stock, so you better get yours now.
Come
There's someone I knew, Joe Walsh. I didn't know him until I met him, so it wasn't one of those things. But I think that's the perfect. He's just a wild guy. Was. I don't know him anymore. I mean, I know him anymore. He's one of those. No, that couldn't be one of those guys because I actually did something. I did work with him. But here's the deal. That waffle stomp is a great piece of pop culture philosophy. because it takes us into the whole world of ADD. And today, because there wasn't ADD, I don't think there was ADD as prevalent or what have you when that was. That came out in the 70s. Hey, did I mention my name is Frank Cotolo, my man's name is doing the title of the show. You're listening to Cotolo Chronicles. I'm chronicling, and we're talking about information overload. And there's so many things now on the internet. And of course, there's even noise about information overload. And I found something I'm going to talk about that comes from some website. And then we're going to look at what you might be doing. And of course, you might say, look, I don't even have enough information. You may not even be affected by all this noise. Have been, all of us. And a thing I love about that, about the Joe Walsh piece there is that, it has this, so there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. And there's always something to do. And you could do whatever you want to do, as ridiculous and as weird as it might sound, if your mind is as open as the person who sang that song, the lyrics of that song. You know, you could jump off a roof, maybe you'll glide, maybe you'll die, whatever it is. I mean, you could do anything you want to do. It's an ode to free will. And that has to do also with think. Imagine thinking there's nothing to do. What you're really saying is there's nothing, something I'd like to do, but I'm not doing it. Or you could think of something. There's probably so many things you like to do or you'd want to try. You don't know if you like it. So I think that fits right into this, especially with ADD, because, the idea that you're not able to focus and then blaming that on some kind of information overload. But there is a study. There was a study that said information overload isn't a thing. And I'm going to look at this. Let's look at this in terms of what I was talking about, the noise, because we're dealing here with an article that came from the Huffington Post, and it was written by Bianca Bosker. Bianca, and listen, every time I hear these names, and I think to myself, where was there a Bianca when I was growing up? No Biancas. Janet and Sharon and Barbara and. Bianca's. This piece of thing comes from the Huffington Post. And I'll read it to you and we'll go through it like we always do and refer to the stuff we've been talking about, which is noise. All the noise that's attacking you from every possible way and more and more and more. On your mobile phones and your home phones and your, everywhere. I don't have to tell you. It's happening right now. This alone, what's happening to me. I'm part of the noise. Forget information overload. What you've got is information just right load. Okay? That's a conclusion reached by a trio of researchers at Northwestern University and the University of Michigan, who interviewed 77 people in focus groups in an effort to understand the new media consumer's psyche and ability to adapt to the barrage of information age. And the barrage of information. Not just information. The barrage. It's not like the Renaissance. Oh, what a feeling that had. When everybody was the new thinking. Think of that era. What people were thinking and creating. And there was some Renaissance. Like awakening. I think believe that's what Renaissance means in some way. Anyway, contrary to many experts' warnings that the always-on media environment has overwhelmed audiences and created a society of antisocial Facebook addicts more interested in hashtags and hugs, this study found that participants said they felt empowered and enthusiastic about the volume of information at their fingertips, not overloaded. not overloaded. Again, see what I'm saying? These people are growing up, and this is me now, not the article. These people are growing up in this atmosphere, just like the kid who grew up in the city is not overloaded by the sound and the spatial trauma. He doesn't have it, but the country person does because they weren't there. This is nothing new. So there are people who say they have enough. Social networking sites didn't receive that same endorsement from the interviewees. They said when it comes to Facebook and Twitter, it's the quality of information, not the quantity, that turns them off. I think they mean lack of quantity. Here's a quote. Instead of feeling burdened by choice, many participants enjoyed the freedom it brought, especially the range of information available online. According to the study, and this study was published in the Journal of Information, the Information Society. Well, it's like, should have called themselves the 411 Society. Is it still 411 if you just dial and get information? I know, it's going to cost money now, though. Our participants expressed near unanimous enthusiasm about the new media environment, finding the good in it. I don't know which side you're on, but I'm giving you the other side here now. Social media garnered little love among the interviewees, who ranged from 20-somethings to people over 60. 22 out of the 77 participants had considerably negative feelings about social networking sites, while 9 out of the 77 expressed strong positive feelings. Another quote. There is a distaste for activities on social network sites, suggesting that many people are annoyed by what they perceive as the minutiae of people's lives fed to them through Facebook and Twitter, says the author of the study. In this case, that negative perception was fueled more by social media sites' reputation, what researchers call reflected assumptions about how certain services work, more than users' personal experiences with the sites. There are a few caveats to the findings to keep in mind. Listen to this. 11 of the 77 people interviewed did report a sense of information overload, and one participant even likened himself to Robin Williams' character in Moscow on the Hudson. Now they're going to do a radio. They're going to do a movie connection. And I didn't do mine before, but let's look at that. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but you're going to have to go by. But anyway, here is Robin Williams plays a Russian who comes to America, and there is tons of cultural shock. It was also known once, and it wasn't called information overload, it was cultural shock. But in the movie, Robin Williams has to pick up a can of coffee at the supermarket, and he hyperventilates because there are so many choices of coffee. And that's how a lot of people say they feel with all the sources of information. One of the study's authors, I can't even pronounce his name, I will try, Northwestern Associate Professor Esther Hargitay, I don't know. Anyway, said that this, the feelings of being overwhelmed by information were most common in people with elementary internet skills who were familiar with navigating. They were unfamiliar with navigating search engines and media sites. The people who are growing up in this environment, again, like the kid in the city with the honking horns and the spatial limitations, maybe my children, you know, it's not overload to them. They're getting used to this as part of their environment, as part of their behavior, as part of their of everything that they do, because they're relying on it, they're living with it. iPhones are now an appendage to people. The mobile connection to the world used to be just cell phones. Now it's like, right? It's smartphones. So the research is also based on interviews conducted in 2009, which, and that in the scheme of progress, that's like, what is that? That's centuries ago. In the tech world time, at least, right? When the researchers held their focus groups, Pinterest hadn't yet launched. Instagram hadn't been born. Google Plus wasn't even a glimmer. and Larry Page's eye. Who's Larry Page? See, the guy who did Glue? I don't even know that. And that's not even a very... I think that pretty much bombed, didn't it? Facebook was years away from unveiling the all-seeing, all-sharing, frictionless apps. And there weren't even apps. And Twitter had half as many users as it does now. Twitter, 140 million people have each, and maybe some of them have two or three, accounts. And like some of these people say, that inside of the, you know, information isn't always something you need. That's where it comes. Too much information. You know, do we know? Do we care? I saw a great cartoon in the New Yorker magazine, which is a great magazine. That was an endorsement, huh? I shouldn't do that. It's a funeral, obviously, a funeral. Two people are standing among any number of chairs that are placed before the casket. And there's a guy and a girl, a man and a woman, and the man says to the woman, he had 4,000 Facebook friends. I was expecting a bigger turnout. There's nobody there at the funeral. Friends. Friends. He had friends at Facebook. I was expecting a bigger turnout. Nobody came to the funeral. In 2009, there were over 20 hours of video uploaded to YouTube per minute. And in 2012, over 72 hours of video uploaded per minute. Per minute, there were 2.5 million tweets per day in 2009. There's over 340 million tweets per day and growing as we go into the 13th year of the new millennium. Tumblr had 642,000 blogs in 2009. In 2012, Tumblr exceeded 50 million blogs. Now, we got the second level. It's not just the people. It's not just the companies. It's not just the religious outfits. It's not just the Ron Pope Peel commercial places. It's not just the organizations, the associations. It's the individuals. Now, of course, you're not attacked by a lot of this stuff, because even though there's 50 million blogs on Tumblr, you tell me if you even know of three. Sorry, I mean, I tell you about Cotolo.tumblr.com, and but, you know, how many? You may have your own. How many read yours? Read them? I mean, but still, it's still stuff that's going out there that is has not been as easily brought out there in terms of audience participation. And yet, I don't know if it's much different than the person in the country who never went to was talking to people. He might have talked to more people and said, maybe let's look at the reverend. Let's look at the he's not a telemarketer if he's not on television, but let's look at the preacher in a rural area who's talking to people and giving his opinion from his book or good book and whatever. And he's talking to his fold. I'm sorry. I said foal as if he was a horse and he had a baby. He's talking to his fold, talking to his congregation. So he's giving that's his blog. And, you know, these people might be talking to one another, and that's their blogs. They're telling each other what's going on, what's happening. And you know what? The people in the country in that particular congregation, let's say one person was telling 16 other people about his life. That was his blog. He had an audience of 16 people. Don't let this fool you. There's 50 million Tumblr blogs, and some of them don't even have 15 people reading their expression. So how much different is that? Yes, I have beverage. I'm replenishing my precious bodily fluids, even as we speak. Oh, it's coffee. I don't know what this world would be without coffee. It should be statues everywhere of the specific person. That person who saw the dogs going crazy out there in that, I don't know where, I forgot We did a whole show on this once, and I forgot. Oh, you know, it's in there in my brain somewhere. I just have not grabbing it now. But I remember it was a guy, and they were eating. The thing was growing, and the dogs were eating the stuff, and they were going crazy because, well, hey, that's hot. Hey, that's good. It's making me high. It's making them high. I think I'll have some of that. And then just, who is that guy? Why aren't the statues of him everywhere? Who wakes up and doesn't have coffee? In the entire world. You know, culture to culture to culture. And I've been in other cultures. I've been to other countries. You know, in the morning, have coffee. I don't care whether you walk around in a cultural uniform or like, you know, because you live in the desert or, you know, have coffee. Cafes in Turkey have coffee. And the streets of Turkey are a lot different than the streets of Madison, Wisconsin. And what are they having in the morning? Coffee. The deluge of data being churned out by media through the internet hasn't just ticked up in the past few years. It's exploded. While information overload might not have weighed on users' minds in 2009, news consumers might give a very different answer if asked the same question today. All of this fits into what I was talking about years ago and what happened to the internet, which we can document pretty much through this show if we had every show, but we didn't because we couldn't record them. And that is that since internet radio began, at least, forget about just the people who were working, just transferring data when this internet was functioning in the beginning with modems and things, regardless of speed. But just from that time, and we kept saying, when the content industry, and this is what Dr. Lawrence Lesser said when he was here, and the more they get a hold of how powerful this internet can be, how far-reaching, they will, the more that they're going to come in and add traffic. When you hear traffic, don't you hear horns? When you hear traffic, don't you sense claustrophobia? Traffic. You sense a spatial trauma? Traffic. Noise? Traffic. Noise and traffic. And what do they call it? How much, hey, on your internet, on your site, hey, get a lot of traffic? Huh? Want me to tell you how to get traffic over there? Noise? More noise, more people, more things, more stuff, interactivity. Hey, yeah, get them up, sign them up, give me your email, let me get each. Let's go here, let's do that. Hey, boom, boom. The reverberations, the echoes, it's like it's one little piece of information is a stone you toss into a stream, and the ripples are endless. So anyway, here, what this says, the deluge of information is churned by the media. Media, I'm talking about content industry now, of all stripes has, I got to move this mic here so I can read better. There you go. I'm going to hold on to it. A new breed of companies has been spawned by all this. There's Relevance, Newsly, Sumify, which was acquired by Twitter, Zeit and Flipboard. They aim to help tame the information flow and distinguish the jewels from the junk. Now, they remember them. You don't let somebody else distinguish the jewels from the junk. You can't do that. You know why? It's all junk. All junk. And I'm included in it. My telling you it's all junk is also all junk. Because none of it matters that you don't use for your own benefit or what have you. And that, use the information that you translate into yourself and you pass on with your own voice, with your own personality, with your own self. And as I sit and look at the vaudeville of the telemarketers at night, that's it. I'm entertained. If I'm entertained by that, that's fine. Because it's not affecting me. It doesn't make a big impression upon me other than to be entertainment. When you use any source of information or any numbers of sources of information that come from there, just like in any other facet of life before there was this barrage of information. When you use it to, as a, you know, as some kind of treasure you've found, as opposed to assimilating, then you're weirded out. See, but that's always been the case. Always been the case. I said that twice because it's always been the case. I said it three times because it's always been the case. That's four. So these companies that are saying, how do you weed out this? I say, how do you weed out this stuff? That's the end of that article, by the way. So there's the other side of it. Isn't that the end of it? Or are there other pages? Gosh, you mean to look? You know, even the page, the internet page itself of anything is so, it's so busy. I love the word busy. When I was in publishing, I used to love busy magazine covers, busy magazine content. I come from a world that was filled with noise in every possible way. So I go into the world of information overload in terms of technical stuff. I'm available to process this stuff because I grew up in that city with that noise. And I'm talking about the noise. I'm talking about everybody talking. I'm talking about television, which was young when I was young, radio, which was available at the same time, and of course changed when television came along. More noise. But I'm also talking about the fact that I lived in that spatial trauma, that atmosphere of spatial trauma, and I lived with the idiocy of people noise. People who were always available to tell you what they think and what they thought was correct. And how they wanted you, this is noise, wanted you to think, to understand, to be whatever it is they said. And that's no different than having all of this stuff laid upon you, or you're allowing this stuff to make you any different, as opposed to using it for the fine tools that this information can help you build anything you need. Which also means not being afraid of it. You're the only one who can filter any of this stuff. The noise is the noise. The noise has always been there. And I guarantee you that if tomorrow, for some reason or another, they turned off the internet. Could you imagine that now? You got already, I think, two generations that would be stunned at first, but turning around and finding the noise elsewhere. But isn't it fascinating that every study, I'm sure every study is going to show this, every study is going to show that those growing up in this environment are going to feel less attacked by the overload. I'm not going to call it overload. They're not overloaded. They're going to feel less attacked, if attacked at all, by the surge, and it is a surge, of information, because they can deal with it. They can categorize it. Their brain has developed with it and is able to address it, use it. We're rapidly going past the generation of people who are stomping their feet saying, this internet and all this stuff is just, it's doing the kids. Those are the same, that's the same noise I was hearing about television when I was a kid. It wasn't even on 24 hours. And that, I'm sure, is the same, and I was hearing later on, or even before me, when they were talking about rock and roll and those kids out there. Kids are, you know, yeah, and they should be doing this, or they should be going to church, or they should be, and you should be, and you have to be, and you should be, and you do. Noise, 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 noise. Those are the real explosions that can help you overload. And people have been overloading for years with a lot less than what's going on out here. But you, what are you doing? Do you feel overloaded? Because I gotta tell you something. The more you care about it, the more you give it the power of then the worse off you're going to be. If you sit down at a piano, if you know anything about a piano or any instrument at all, you can be as proficient with it as you'd like. It just takes you. You know, we've done shows that have gone into various areas of the things I'm talking about. We've done a lot of them. The blog situation. See, all of this stuff develops from the fact that people want to give you their opinions. People want to, they either want to hide or they want to totally tell you what they think. And that's like, it's important because it gives people importance. See, but it's not important. Nothing anyone thinks is important, believe me. Nothing. And when you attach yourself to other people who think your way, and so therefore that's important, and now we're important, now we're an important group. I thought I was just important because I thought this way. Now I'm with you. And then you go and you get more input. There's no dynamism difference. You can't get enough. And once you've convinced yourself and stand in one particular position and stance and opinion, there's no move. It doesn't matter how much information is given to you, because it's down to the same couple of pieces of information. There's a least common denominator in all this stuff. 50 billion bytes of liberal thought, 50 billion bytes of conservative thought are just that. They don't cross over, they don't touch one another, they don't embrace anything good about one another. We also talked very, very early in internet radio about the genre. The fact that what the internet has done, and it did this in the beginning with, is categorize things. And it made a tree, not a tree of influences, but a tree of differences. And so the genre was very important. And, you know, when I make when I process this particular wave file, this file of this show that I do, they always ask, what category? What category? Is it talk? Is it politics? Is it culture? Is it music? Is it meh? Because it's all different. You know, why does it have to be something? Why does it have to be labeled? Because they got to put it in that shelf. Because people want to know. I listen to talk. I like talk. I listen to music. I like music. I don't like talk. I listen. And then they cut it down. Oh, not just talk. I'm talking about religion talk. Religious talk? Yeah. Then the second. Oh, no, I'm going to talk about political talk. And not just political talk. Liberal political talk. No, conservative political. No, they're talking. I like sports. What kind of sports? All sports. Well, mostly football. But I like hockey. And I listen to hockey. When the hockey's not hockey and it's football. And then it's this and then it's that. Round and round it goes. Where it stops, you think you know. So what I'm talking about is, like, all this information is coming into you anyway. All the people, everything, every possible way. It's not just the tech thing, not the tech thing at all. So is that too much? What is too much? What is too much? Maybe that's an individual's choice. Maybe that's, you know, what an individual chooses. This is too much for me. Oh, I can't take that. That's too much for me. This thing called infogeneering. Infogeneering. Okay? Surviving and thriving in the age of information overload. Surviving and thriving. Like it's going to kill you. I mean, some people will let it kill them. I can't take it anymore. I got to go away to an island somewhere. If they went away to an island somewhere and they didn't have any of this stuff, they'd probably shoot themselves. They'd jump off the highest tree. In this, site is called Infogeneering. Information overload is an increasing problem, both in the workplace and in life in general. Those that learn to deal with it effectively will have a major advantage in the next few years. Now, I'm not talking about learning to deal with it. I'm talking about seeing it all as noise. Once you see it all as noise, you're attracted only to the noise that makes any kind of sense to you or that you like. But it's still noise. Information overload is when you are trying... Here's this infogeneering explanation. Information overload is when you are trying to deal with more information than you are able to process to make sensible decisions. Are we like kids? Do you realize the amount... When you're driving a car, do you realize the amount of skill that you're... The amount of information that's coming through you to be able to not hit everything in sight? Do you ever stop at the car and go, oh, I can't drive anymore. I don't go left. I don't know where to go right. You can go left. You can go right. You can go straight. It's like thinking like Joe Walsh's song. What do I do? I don't know what to do. I could jump out of a plane. I could parachute. I could study doctorism. Doctorism? What is doctorism? there's so much. It's just so much. How do I know what can of coffee to buy? Just pick one. You could have the same problem if there were only two coffee cans that were different brands than if there's 23. You might not look at that as the same thing. I do. Because you still, if you don't know this, if there's not 23, it's a lot different if there's two. What do you, eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Catch a coffee can by the toe. You take one, you make a decision. A decision. But you're sitting there going, well, why are there two? Why isn't, if there's only one, you make no decision. And then you're being given no choice. Like this. It is now commonplace to be getting too many emails, reports, and incoming messages to deal with them effectively. I know I'm saying this editorial twinge. But it says this is the information overload age. The first recorded use of the phrase information overload, he's going to give us some history, I didn't know this, was used by futurologist Alvin Toffler in 1970. I have talked about Alvin Toffler any number of times on this show because we talked about his great book, Future Shock, which predicted a lot of the stuff, but it didn't predict overload. It predicted easy acceptance because there was so much stuff happening. But anyway, it says Alvin Toffler brought to our attention we were living in the information age, but he predicted that the rapidly increasing amounts of information being produced would eventually cause people problems. And this guy who wrote this particular a blog or whatever, this infogeneering thing, misses the point. Yes, it can cause problems, but he missed the point. Toffler was not saying that as much as he was saying, we're not confused, we're not shocked when something happens, because so much has happened so quickly, so much has been invented, so much has been changed and progressed, and we're not spinning in place, we're accepting it. And we do, because now, when somebody says, you got a smartphone? I got a smartphone. You should get the new one. Why? The new one you could actually hook up to your throat and it'll tell you whether you have a bacteria. And the other guy goes, really? They just accept it. I'm going to go get that. Look at all the apps. I got an app now. I put it on my smartphone. And what does the app do? Well, the app takes my blood pressure. They do that. They have it. You accept it. Because you know it's not going to cause you a problem. But although people talk about, I'm back to this reading this thing, although people talk about living in the information age, written information has been used for thousands of years. Hey, this guy or gal, or whoever, is talking like me now. The invention of the printing press a few hundred years ago made it possible to distribute written information to large amounts of people. However, it is only with the advent of modern computers that the ability to create, duplicate, and access vast amounts of information has created information overload amongst the general population. He uses the word amongst. That alone makes me want to just toss it out. It's too, he can't nail this thing down. You cannot nail this thing down. Write this down. Write that down in your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook. The root of the problem, says this, is although computer processing and the memory is increasing all the time, the humans that must use the information are not getting any faster. Effectively, the human mind acts as a bottleneck in the process. You ready? Everybody all together. That childish sound reflects exactly what we're talking about. It says the brain can actually handle tens of millions of signals from our senses every second. See what I'm telling you? He's right. Take back that raspberry for that one. Yes. Think of the number of light sensors within the eye and equate this to the resolution of a digital camera and the corresponding file size of the photos it produces. Then include the thousands of touch-sensitive areas of your body and the range of our hearing. But we can still deal with all of this because the brain has had tens of millions of years of evolution to deal with it. Right? Well, that's right. That's the fact, of course. We are dealing with it. But he says, compare those tens of millions of years to a few thousand years we've been dealing with information such as talking and writing. Our brains are still learning to deal with this, so we can only process a very small amount of it at a time. No. You're getting everything no matter what. You are processing what you want to, but it's all there. It's all there, and it's always been there. You just get more so, you know, this guy, I'm saying guy, I don't know. Is making it into something that belittles the human spirit, the human mind. Now I sound like Tony Robbins. No, I'm not going to sell you a 5-DVD set of me standing with a wonderful hairdo saying, you can do it, you can do it. Here's what he said. Here are the causes of now listen to this. This is the causes of information overload. This is what he says. She says. It says. They say. One, the widespread access to the web.
Wrong.
Well, let me read this and not. You know how I feel. I think I've made if I haven't made myself clear yet, and we're like an hour and 45 minutes into this, then, you know, what can I say? I already told you this is noise. This is junk. The ease of sending email messages to a large number of people. As information can be duplicated for free, there is no variable cost in producing more copies. People send reports and information to people who may need to know rather than definitely need to know. Poorly created information sources, especially online, which are not simplified or filtered to make them shorter, are not written clearly, so people have to spend more time understanding them, contain factual errors or inconsistencies requiring further research. Now, you know that and I agree with some of this because the internet is not, but you know, if you look at the internet as this all-knowing, all-educating tool, then you're going to be wrong. Of course, the internet is strewn. If you spend one day with misspellings and misuses with the typos, spend 2 hours if you want to, and just go from randomly to websites. Forget about how grammar is dismissed. Look at the typos and the things that are just nuts. How badly a lot of it is put together. From the beginning, I said, and this has been documented by anybody who heard me from the beginning, and any number of people would testify. I'll gather them together, and we'll put them on a stand and testify to this. I said the best thing about the internet is that anybody can have access. Anybody can say what they want. Anybody can have a website. Anybody can present to whoever wants it what they have to say. That's the best thing about it. The worst thing about it is that anybody can get on the internet. Anybody can have their own website. Anybody, you see what I'm saying? So they say that the problem, and anyway, this infogeneering is just about solutions. Let's look at his solutions, their solutions, it's, hers, I don't know. Although there are no simple solutions to the problems of information overload, there are some things that can help, that you can to do to reduce the problem. You can look up this stuff on your own. Spending less time on gaining information that is nice to know and spending more time on what we need to know now. What we need to know now. Now is a key word. Of course, you always want to know what you need to know now. But, you know, you have this fantastic tool in front of you, whether you're taking it around mobily or anything. And so you have access to a library on your person. That's a fabulous thing to have. There's nothing wrong with that for anything. Any noise you want, any information you need to know. And information you don't need to know, how do you know you're not going to need to know it some other time? Your brain is managing it. Don't undermine the power of the brain. Just like he said in this website before, and just like I was saying when you're driving a car. He says, focus on the quality of information rather than the quantity. I think people do that anyway. Learning how to create a better information, be direct in what you ask people so they can provide short, precise answers. Yeah, short, yeah. If you're direct, someone's going to, you know, definitely they're going to give you a short, precise answer. No, you're going to wind up going, too much information. Talk to the hand. All these great sayings that have come into the jargon of conversation. Single tasking and keeping the mind focused on one issue at a time. Okay, listen, let me tell you something. If you can juggle, if you learn to juggle physically, then you can learn to multitask, which is just a phrase for doing a number of things at once, and you can do them. If you can't do them, you do as many as you can. But everyone is capable of that. And has always been. And people who say, I can't do this and I can't do that, are just saying, I don't want to. And I'm not doing the Tony Robbins on thing on you. I'm not saying you're all Superman. If you can't, you don't have to, you don't want to, just make the decision. Don't make this a complicated issue. Don't make it a spiritual issue. Don't make it a physical issue. Relax. It's noise. Wake up. It's night. What do you think that's all about? I say it. You say it all the time. I say it. You don't have that much time. Get everything you can. Feel everything you can. Keep your mind as open as possible. You don't have enough time. Don't dedicate it to a specific that is just and only and always will be noise. Listen to this. Spending parts of the day disconnected from interruptions so you can fully concentrate for a significant period of time on one thing. Everybody ready? Ready? Why are they so wonderful? Why are raspberries wonderful? Why are raspberries wonderful is the topic of our next show when we return. Next time on Cotolo Chronicles. My name is Frank Cotolo. A man whose name adorns the title of the show, My Noise, the show as I chronicle. If you have anything to say about this show or any of the show, you get to me, fcotolo@yahoo.com. You can email me there, or you could even be my friend and ask me to be IM. Ask me to get on the IM. I show up now and then. I chat. I don't like chatting. I mean, in essence, I would eventually. But here and there, you can get, you know, you talk to people. Exposure better than no exposure. I say that while I'm out in the middle of nowhere in a building. You know what I'm saying. I think you know what I'm saying. I know a lot of you listen to me over and over again know what I'm saying. This is, I know this is a very Zen-like approach, but that's okay. Because as a neo-postmodernist, I know that everything that comes in, all that stuff that people consider overload, all that stuff may have, do you know any one piece of information could save your life? Did you ever see a movie? Here's a movie you might want to see. It's called The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin. It's a screenplay by playwright David Mamet. The Edge. Any piece of information or pieces of information that you may think are worthless. This really fits into our conversation today, tonight, tomorrow, whenever you're listening. The Edge. See that movie. This is not an advertisement to buy it or anything. See it however you can. The Edge. Pieces of information you had no idea could do as much, that were as powerful. Now, if you blocked them, if you were blocking everything or certain things, and the time came for that piece of information, how would you call upon it if you do not have it? If your brain was not exposed to it, you wouldn't know, would you? Would you? At Facebook, Frank Cotolo, I use my real name. Get to me there, ask me to be friends. Hey, you know what happened recently? I didn't do this. I haven't been asking people to be my friend, and yet they banned me for 2 weeks getting new friends. For me to go out and get new friends. Why? I haven't asked anybody to be my friend who isn't my friend or who isn't a friend of my friend. I haven't even done that. I don't spend a lot of time doing that. But I have been getting a lot of requests to be a friend. Now, I thought that if people ask you, they want to be a friend, you got a friend request, you got 10 friend requests. If I just press yes, why do I get blamed for finding friends I don't know? You gotta be careful because Facebook says if you don't know these people, what is that all about? What kind of nonsense is that? Okay, they think they punished me? For 2 weeks, you'll not be able to get more friends. So, you know, whenever you're hearing this, I don't know. Write me an email personally, fcotolo@yahoo.com. If you don't go to Facebook, so don't go to Facebook. Go to Twitter, @FrankCotolo. Follow me there. Write to me there. Send me a direct message. You don't have to. They're never going to say, oh, you're following somebody you don't know. Or maybe they will one day. I don't even know what they'll do. But you can do that. And you can be in touch with me. And I will further promote Cotolo.tumblr.com. It's not always fresh, exciting material. It's always funny and exciting material. It's not always fresh, but it'll be fresh to you if you haven't been there. Go there. Scroll down. Scroll up. Same thing with the books. You heard about License to Skill, and you've been hearing about it. That digital book. Have some entertainment. If you learn anything from it or get anything from it, that's your business. I'm not overloading you because you can't be overloaded. Your brain is better than that. I know it. And I think you know it too. License to Skill at Amazon. Or go to blurb.com and get yourself a copy of Molotov Memoirs. Get a hard copy. Get a couple of hard copies if you got some bread because they're not cheap. Or get the cheap ones. Put it on your iPhone. Put it on your smartphone. Put it in your mama tea. Be my little sugar. And get it. Molotov Memoirs. Go to lulu.com and get yourself. I got some exciting news about one of the books at lulu.com. That's coming up in, I don't know when. I can't even begin to tell you when some of this stuff is going to happen. But, I mean, there'll be stuff, and it might not be exciting. I said, we've got exciting news. It might not be exciting to you. You might not care in the least. What else? Any number of things. But be sure to be back here again. Who's that? Hey.
That's Mr. Control over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's... Thank you. you got to do. Do it as best as you want to do it, and just relax. Don't worry about that noise. It really has no power over you. I will be back, and you'll see me here and there. You'll hear about me. I don't know. Whatever you do is okay with me. My name is Frank Cotola, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Keep watching CotolaChronicles.blogspot.com and anywhere over there at Facebook. Find out what we're doing. We've got guests. We've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you are. As for now, my noise will be silenced. You can't be silenced, noise. I'll turn noise into silence, just the way he turned water into wine. And also because I have nothing more to say.